Translation, thus smashed by Balaram's fist, Pralamba's head immediately cracked open. The demon vomited blood from his mouth and lost all consciousness, and then with a great noise, he fell lifeless on the ground like a mountain devastated by Indra. So, most of you are probably familiar with the story of Pralambasura, that Kamsa, it mentions nectar devotion practically on a daily basis, was sending various demons to Vrindavan to try to kill Krishna and Balaram. But it was not very successful. He had quite a collection of allies and friends that were great wizards. Actually, Prabhupada refers to them at one point as wizards, who had all kinds of mystic powers, and they could transform their shapes as they liked, and also whatever size they liked. So they were quite formidable in the ordinary sense. We don't have any experience of such personalities these days, but these personalities are very powerful, very strong, and very clever. So this Pralamba actually took the form of one of the cowherd boys, and he entered into the games that were being played by Krishna Balaram, and they were engaging in a duel, having duels amongst each other. And whoever won the duel, the other person had to carry them on their backs as a sort of victory celebration. The winners would be carried on the backs of the losers. So this sort of sporting propensity is inherent, apparently, in the living being. Anyway, so this was going on, and Pralamba was looking for his chance to cause havoc. So his team, he was on Krishna's team, but Krishna's team lost. So he had to carry Balaram on his back. So he immediately, very quickly, carried Balaram away from that area. And Balaram noticed that this person was changing in his appearance. He was expanding his form, became larger and larger, and more demonic in appearance. So it actually mentions in the Bhagavatam that Balaram felt a little bit alarmed at this situation, but then realized that it was a dangerous situation, and he took action, as we've just described in this verse from the 18th chapter of the 10th canto. So the fact that Pralambasura expanded himself, and the fact that no matter how much he expanded himself, Balaram had no trouble dispatching him, is significant, because according to the analysis of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, he says that Pralambasura represents lust for the opposite sex, and the desire for profit, adoration, and distinction. So these are both the gross and subtle form of sex life, and sex life is practically the single most greatest obstacle in spiritual advancement, either on the gross platform or the subtle platform. One or the other usually captures or has some power over the living being. Even if he manages to overcome the desire for sex life on the gross platform, then on the subtle platform, this three-headed serpent raises its head. Profit, adoration, and distinction. So people want these things very much in materialistic life. That gives a little background. It says, according to the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, in his previous life, Pralambasura was Sudarshana, one of the brothers of someone called Suhotra, who later became Pakasura, another demon that came to cause trouble. And according to the Garga Samhita, he was also Vijaya, the son of a Gandharva king named Huhu, sort of interesting name. But he was cursed by Kuvera and to become a demon for stealing some flowers from one of his gardens. So he was quite a formidable character. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in writing about Pralambasura, says this. He says, lusty attraction for the opposite sex, greed for money, the desire for sense gratification, inclinations for increasing one's honor, and false prestige, the desire for being worshipped, these are all certainly very strong obstacles and are very difficult to overcome. But if one understands that they are very detrimental for one's development in Krishna consciousness, one will try very enthusiastically to cast them out. If one endeavors in a very humble mood, Krishna will certainly show his mercy. Then, upon the awakening of the mood of Sri Baladeva in the devotee's heart, these contaminations will instantly be removed. The methods of the process of purification are very deep and mysterious. Therefore, it is necessary to learn about them directly from a bona fide spiritual master. So there's a couple of nice points that, as Balaram also represents Guru Tattva, the original spiritual master. So the idea is that by taking shelter of the spiritual master and being directed by him in the practice of devotional service, one is able to overcome even the most difficult anarthas. Now, the demons that are killed by... This is something that's also mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says that these two demons that were killed by Balaram, Danukasura and Pralambasura, they represent some of the most difficult anarthas to get rid of, to overcome. He writes... see if I can find it. Yeah. He says that a person says the aspirant devoted to chanting the holy name should in the very beginning loudly address the all-powerful Lord Hari, always praying for him to drive out these anarthas. If he does, his heart will be purified. If the devotee cries out most humbly and piteously to Hari to drive out the trouble of those asuras, he will himself remove those evils. But they will have to drive out with their own efforts the troubles of those asuras whom Baladeva has killed. Danukasura, he says, is the evil of maintaining material conceptions, prejudices, and superstition. Pralambasura is the evil of licentiousness, gain, honor, and aspiration to selfish ends. Then back to Danukasura, he says, the loss of knowledge of one's spiritual identity, ignorance concerning the non-difference of the name of Krishna and Krishna, and ignorance of our relationship with Krishna constitute Danukasura. So not knowing who and what you are, ignorance of one's identity, ignorance about the non-difference of Krishna and his holy name, these are all described as constituting Danukasura. And it says sexual attraction for male or female, greed for wealth, effort for acquiring material prosperity, increasing one's honor, fame, and reputation, etc., are very pernicious anarthas. And knowing these as strong impediments in the worship of the holy name, one must remove them with his best care and attention. If one's humility becomes very deep and intense, Krishna will be merciful. In that case, the feeling of Baladeva's presence will arise in the mind, and then these anarthas will be destroyed in no time. Then favorable and smooth cultivation of spiritual practice will gradually improve. So, as with all dangers that were confronted by the Brijabasis and all the dangers that are being confronted by devotees in their execution of spiritual life, ultimately the solution is to completely take shelter of the spiritual master and Krishna, the Supreme Lord. Because without achieving their mercy, really we have no chance. Just as Maya is the most powerful influence in this world, is the external energy, Maya. And that Maya cannot be overcome by any other means but surrender to Krishna. So also, you know, our friend in this world is the spiritual master, the external manifestation of the supersoul. So sometimes, you know, one gets into trouble with these particular anarthas, especially this profit, adoration, and distinction. One aspires to become a recognized and great devotee, and it kind of turns into a kind of almost self-worship. And these are great dangers, but if one consults the spiritual master, then he can advise how to overcome these things. So there's a very nice section in the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto. And Prabhupada writes as follows. The effects of bhakti yoga are called the nartanivritti. So this is the nartanivritti is, of course, the stage at which one is removing the gross anartas, be eating, illicit sex, gambling, intoxication. These things were asked to strictly follow at the time of initiation. But the subtler effects of anartanivritti, they may take a bit longer. But it says, the effects of bhakti yoga are called anartanivritti, things which are artificially acquired. Things which are artificially acquired gradually disappear along with the progress of bhakti yoga. Meditation on the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, the first processional step, must show its effect by anartanivritti. The grossest type of anarta, which binds the conditioned soul in material existence, is sex desire, and this sex desire gradually develops in the union of the male and female. When the male and female are united, the sex desire is further aggravated by the accumulation of buildings, children, friends, relatives, and wealth. So this is the expanding. Remember, we talked about Prahlambasura expanding. So this is the expansion process. Once there is a union of male and female, then there's expansion takes place in the form of offspring and in the form of possessions, in the form of so many things. Of course, if they're used in the service of Krishna, they're not obstacles. If they're seen in the right light, just like when Gorkhashordas Babaji Maharaj gave advice to a couple that wanted to be married and they were worrying about their spiritual advancement, he said, no, it's not a problem. He said, you just have to see your wife as a Vaishnavi and serve her very sincerely, that you'll gather foodstuffs and cook and make offerings to the deity, and then you'll serve your wife the remnants of that foodstuff that's offered to the Lord. So then there will be no obstacle. In other words, if you see the partner as a devotee worthy of being served, then this sort of life is not an obstacle. But anyway, generally speaking, this is what takes place, that sex desire is aggravated, Prabhupada says, by the accumulation of buildings, children, friends, relatives, and wealth. When all these are acquired, the conditioned soul becomes overwhelmed by such entanglements, and the false sense of egoism, or the sense of myself and mine, become prominent. And the sex desire expands to various political, social, altruistic, philanthropic, and many other unwanted engagements, resembling the foam of sea waves, which become very prominent. And the sex desire, become very prominent at one time, and at the next moment vanishes as quickly as a cloud in the sky. So all these things that appear to be very, very important, various social, political, philanthropic, altruistic activities, they seem very important at the time, but then it says, they compare them to the foam of sea waves, saying that they're prominent at one moment, and the next moment they vanish. Quickly as a cloud in the sky. The conditioned soul is encircled by such products as well as products of sex desire, and therefore bhakti yoga leads to gradual evaporation of the sex desire, which is summarized in three headings, namely profit, adoration, and distinction. All conditioned souls are mad after these different forms of sex desire. So if we are in the category of conditioned souls, it says we'll be mad after these things. Then one shall see for himself how much he has been freed from such material hankerings based primarily on the sex desire. As a person feels his hunger satisfied after eating each morsel of foodstuff, he must similarly be able to see the degree to which he has been freed from sex desire. Sex desire is diminished along with its various forms by the process of bhakti yoga because bhakti yoga automatically, by the grace of the Lord, effectively results in knowledge and renunciation, even if the devotee is not very well educated. Knowledge means, now this is interesting because he's saying that that the effect of bhakti yoga is knowledge and renunciation. These things will arise automatically. as you practice sincerely. And it says, knowledge means knowing things as they are. And if by deliberation it is found that there are things which are at all unnecessary, naturally the person who has acquired knowledge leaves aside such unwanted things. So if we're not leaving aside such unwanted things, it means that we don't really have much knowledge. Knowledge is not just theoretical, it means what you do, ultimately. The proof of the pudding is one's practical activities. So, it says, if he determines that something is unwanted, it says he gives them up. He leaves them aside. When the conditioned soul finds by culture of knowledge that material necessities are unwanted things, he becomes detached from such unwanted things. This stage of knowledge is called vairagya, or detachment from unwanted things. We have previously discussed, now of course, vairagya doesn't come about by a mental adjustment. It's not like, oh, I think from today I won't be attached anymore. Or I won't be disturbed by, you know, attraction for the opposite sex. I won't be enamored by a person's praise, people's praise or admiration. I just stop now. It's not a mental, it means it's a stage of realization that one has to practice sincerely, and then this understanding, the practical understanding, will come. So it says, this stage of knowledge, vairagya, it says, we have previously discussed that the transcendentalist is required to be self-sufficient and should not beg from the rich blind persons to fulfill the bare necessities of life. So this is a critique of persons that go around fulfilling their material necessities by begging money and facilities from wealthy persons. This is not very much recommended. The idea is that, says Shukadev Goswami, has suggested some alternatives for the bare necessities of life, namely the problem of eating, sleeping, and shelter. So if you remember earlier in the Bhagavatam, Shukadev Goswami gave some ideas about how to solve these things. He said, well, eating, for that matter, there's plenty of fruits and things on the trees. And sleeping you can do practically anywhere. And shelter, you can live in a cave if you need to. Of course, not many of us can do these things, but the idea is to reduce and simplify, keep these things kind of minimal, rather than trying to accumulate more and more opulence and facility. So, but it's not recommended to go around, it says, begging from rich blind persons. Now, why do you think it says blind persons? Anybody? Yes, they're blind when it comes to the absolute. They don't know what the purpose of life is. They think it's to accumulate wealth and to, you know, live a very extravagant life. So he probably calls them blind. So you're taking from blind persons and not giving them anything substantial, then that's not good. So, but so Sukadeva Goswami made suggestions for how to solve three of the out of the four problems. But he didn't give any suggestions about sex desire, sex satisfaction. It says, one who has the sex desire still with him should not at all try to accept the renounced order of life. So by the gradual process of devotional service, under the guidance of a proper spiritual master and following the principles of the Bhagavatam, one must be at least able to control the gross sex desire before one accepts the renounced order of life factually. So sometimes, you know, I remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, there was a lot of pressure on my godbrothers, especially, to take sannyas and to become gurus. And a lot of this was quite artificial because, you know, they weren't on this platform. It was actually a very dangerous step. So if one has self-knowledge, he knows whether he's qualified to do these things. He should know. Unless, you know, one is very expert in the art of self-deception. One should know whether he's qualified to do something like this. So Prabhupada hears it. And therefore, he has to take, if he's not sure, then he has to consult the spiritual master. And here Prabhupada's giving his consultation. He says, unless you can control this desire, then don't do it. says purification means getting free gradually from sex desire, and this is attained by meditation on the person of the Lord as described here in beginning from the feet. One should not try to go upwards artificially without seeing for himself how much he has been released from sex desire. The smiling face of the Lord is the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and there are many upstarts who at once try to begin with the 10th canto, and especially with the 5 chapters which delineate the Rasa Lila of the Lord. This is certainly improper. By such improper study or hearing of the Bhagavatam, the material opportunists have played havoc by indulgence in sex life in the name of the Bhagavatam. So, this is a... And in fact, at one point, Prabhupada says here in the purport, he says, the conclusion is that those who are still entrapped by sex indulgence should never progress to meditation above the feet of the Lord. Therefore, recital of Srimad Bhagavatam by them should be restricted to the first and second cantos of this great literature. So, of course, we know there are other statements of Prabhupada where he encourages us to read Krishna book and other such books, but the idea is that because it's so they're purported and explained so carefully that the danger is not so much there, but the idea is that we should be a little cautious in the progression of pure devotional service. Now, so anartha, in one sense, it refers to, it means literally things that are not wanted. Unwanted, things that are unwanted. So obviously sex life and the subtle forms of sex life, these are unwanted things. But another way to describe anartha is given in the 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Prabhupada writes or translates anartha as of things not wanted, birth, old age, disease, and death. So these are anarthas. I mean, we don't generally think of those things as anarthas, but it's a fact. We don't want those things. They're unwanted. So these four things, these are the actual problems of life, the actual obstacles. To be as soon as we're embodied, we have to confront these things. Some of you are young yet, so you don't know about the old age yet, what that's like. Believe me, it's not great. None of it's very good. I mean, sometimes people think birth is like, oh, it's so beautiful and mystical and wonderful, but it's not great for the child. If you read the descriptions of how the child experiences birth, it's not a very pleasant experience. What to speak of old age and disease, at least we have some experience, generally not pleasant. Death, from all descriptions, also not pleasant. So these are also anartha. Now in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a very nice section about the cleaning of the Gundicha Mandir, and I know many of you have heard these sections before. I'm not going to read the entire, this is quite a lengthy purport to this verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, e mhata purdhara agi patayat sakala sudhile tahai ke varnibe kat. Outside the gateway of the temple, all the roads were also cleansed, and no one could tell exactly how this was done. So this has to do with the cleaning of the Gundicha Mandir, had to do with preparing that temple to receive the Lord, the presence of the Lord, as the cleansing process. So this practice, sadhana bhakti, is this cleansing process. So in his commentary, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives quite an elaborate discussion. And the first recommendation made by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when they were cleaning the Gundicha Mandir was that everyone should chant constantly. It's because sometimes, you know, when you start to read all these statements about all the different kinds of offenses you can commit, I mean, if you really get into it, you know, there's Dham Aparad, Vaishnav Aparad, Guru Aparad, Seva Aparad. There's a huge list of things that where you can go wrong. But then there's, you know, all these anarthas that we have to deal with. And, you know, one can think, oh, you know, maybe I should just give up. But ultimately, the only solace and the only shelter is the holy name of the Lord. and achieving the mercy of the Lord. If you achieve the mercy of the Lord, then you can easily, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Davigesha Gunamai Mamamaya Dharatyaya, how difficult it is to overcome the influence of Maya. But if one gets Krishna's mercy, by his grace, one can easily cross beyond it. So anyway, that was his first recommendation. Everyone should chant. And as stated in the second chapter of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shinvatang Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyam Taksto Yabhadrani Vidunoti Suhrit Satam. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma, super soul, in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who relishes his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. So, this is the process for cleansing the heart. There's actually no other process that will be effective other than to hear and chant the glories of the Lord, to hear and chant the holy name of the Lord and beg for his mercy. So it says here, the devotee therefore has to cleanse his heart just as the Lord cleansed the Gundicha temple. In this way one can be pacified and enriched in devotional service. If the heart is filled with straw, grains of sand, weeds or dust, in other words, anya bilasha purna, one cannot enthrone the Supreme Personality of Godhead there. The heart must be cleansed of all material motives brought about through fruitive work, speculative knowledge, the mystic yoga system, and so many other forms of so-called meditation. The heart must be cleansed without ulterior motive. As Srila Rupa Goswami says, Anya bilashita shunyam gyanakar madhyanavritam Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In other words, there should not be any external motive. I remember once in Vrindavan, Prabhupada was speaking and then he became silent for a while. And of course, it was not unusual. He was had such a rich inner life. And he stopped speaking and after a little while he said, once there is motive, he said, everything is spoiled. So as long as there's an artha, unwanted things, unwanted motivation in the heart, then there's aggravation. And there should not be any external motive in pure devotional service. It says, one should not attempt material upliftment, understanding the Supreme by speculative knowledge, fruitive activity, severe austerity and penance, and so on. All these activities are against the natural growth of spontaneous love of God. So, and there are other verses which indicate that endeavoring for material opulence, that's against the principle of devotional service. Sometimes people think, oh yeah, I'll earn lots and lots of money and gain all kinds of wealth, and then I'll use it all for Krishna's service. Well, often that's not what happens. If one becomes wealthy and forgets all about Krishna, that's more the tendency. What you need for practical life and devotional service, yes, that may be endeavored for a bit, but it's like there's these four propensities, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Usually, artha, economic development, and kama, they go hand in hand, and the other things are sort of forgotten. So, it says it's against the principle of devotional service. Material enjoyment includes activities such as great sacrifices for auspicious activity, charity, austerity, elevation to the higher planetary system, and even living happily within the material world. Sometimes people think, oh yeah, well, you know, this is important. We have to have lots of nice, opulent situations so that we can be happy in this world. Not really recommended. And the Lord's not really satisfied by those type of activities. It says here that no one can satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by such activities. Nor do we give the Lord a chance to sit in our hearts peacefully. Rather, the Lord is simply disturbed by them. So then, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as given by Prabhupada here, it gets into the nitty-gritty of the issue. He says, by his practical example, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has shown us that all the grains of sand must be picked up thoroughly and thrown outside. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also cleansed the outside of the temple, fearing that the grains of sand would again come within. In this connection, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that even though one may become free from the desire for fruitive activity, sometimes the subtle desire for fruitive activity again comes into being within the heart. One often thinks of conducting business to improve devotional activity. But the contamination is so strong that it may later develop into misunderstanding described as kutinati, fault-finding, and pratishtasa, the desire for name and fame and for high position. Jiva-himsa, envy of other living entities. Nisidachar, accepting things forbidden in the Shastra. Kama, desire for material gain. And puja, hankering for popularity. So these are all the subtle aspects of fruit of intention, fruit of desire. Basically means what's in, there's a joke they make sometimes that people are tuned in this station called WIFM. Meaning what's in it for me. And that tendency to think this way leads to these things. Hankering for popularity, desire for name and fame and high position, being envious of others. All these things may come about through a fruitive kind of mentality. So it says, the word kutinati means duplicity. So kutinati, again, fault-finding. Another meaning, as it says here, is duplicity. As an example of pratishtasa, one may attempt to imitate Sri Haridas Thakur by living in a solitary place. One's real desire may be for name and fame. There's a story, if I'm sort of humorous. I mean, it's not humorous for the poor guy that this happened to, but there was a devotee who thought that he was going to die of some dreaded disease, I don't know, cancer or something. I'm not mentioning his name, just because he may, I don't know. But anyway, he thought he was going to die, so he came to Prabhupada and asked if he couldn't take Babaji initiation. And Prabhupada was quite reluctant initially, but finally he agreed to it. So this devotee was living in Mayapur, and he was chanting, I don't know, some extraordinary number of rounds every day and living in trees and, you know, doing all these really renounced things. But then he went for a checkup with the doctor, and it found out that he wasn't going to die after all. At least not right away. And then the next thing anybody heard about him, he was surfing in Hawaii. So we shouldn't imitate, anyway, shouldn't imitate Haridas Thakur. Says, a neophyte devotee is certain to be attacked by other material desires as well, namely desires for women and money. In this way, the heart is again filled with dirty things and becomes harder and harder, like that of a materialist. Gradually, one desires to become a reputed devotee. So here's part of the progression that one wants to be like, hey, when I came into the room, everybody noticed me. You know, then one becomes enamored with this idea. And then Prabhupada says that you may even desire to become an avatar. He says here, gradually one desires to become a reputed devotee or an avatar. So we see that sometimes people begin to think of themselves in quite exalted terms. Well, I might not be Krishna, but, you know, I might be a Shaktivesh avatar. So and the Prabhupada goes on, he says, the word jiva himsa, envy of other living entities, actually means stopping the preaching of Krishna consciousness. Preaching work is described as para upakara, welfare activity for others. Those who are ignorant of the benefits of devotional service must be educated by preaching. If one stops preaching, so this is actually considered envy. If you have all this knowledge and you don't give it to anyone else, if you don't share it, you become miserly. And here it actually says that it's actually a kind of envy. It says that without this preaching work, if one stops it and simply sits down in a solitary place, he is engaging in material activity, he says. If one desires to make a compromise with the Mayavadis, he is also engaged in material activity. A devotee should never make compromises with non-devotees by acting as a professional guru, mystic yogi, or miracle man. You know, it's funny, because Prabhupada is actually, sometimes people, devotees used to miss it. You know, they would, whatever Prabhupada would say, they would take with absolute seriousness. But a lot of the time, he was just being sarcastic or making jokes. Like, this is actually very funny. He says, become a miracle man. You know, they want to become a miracle man. Oh, I can do it. I can perform miracles, you know. It says, by doing that, one may cheat and bluff the general public and gain fame as a wonderful mystic. But all this is considered to be dust, straw, and grains of sand within the heart. In addition, one should follow the regulative principles and not desire illicit sex, gambling, intoxicants, or meat. So, so this was Lord Chaitanya's practical exhibition. There's so many subtle desires within the heart, and the only real way to address all these things is to chant the holy name. Prabhupada summarizes it like this. He says, by his practical activity, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu informed us how to cleanse our hearts. Once the heart is cleansed, we should invite Lord Sri Krishna to sit down. And we should observe this festival by distributing prasadam and chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So this is the, it always comes down to this. You know, the reason it's good to hear about all these, you know, all these obstacles and difficulties we may run into is that we should become a little bit fearful. We shouldn't, I think one time Prabhupada said about the Western devotees that their problem was they weren't sufficiently afraid of Maya. Maya is extremely powerful and dangerous. So we should become a little alarmed when we hear about all these things that, you know, could waylay us on the path of devotional service. But then the ultimate thing, in the end, it all comes down to chanting and taking shelter of the holy name, taking shelter of the spiritual master's directions, taking shelter of Krishna. That's the only thing that really we can do. It's really up to Krishna when he invites us, when he removes these things from our hearts. So it says here, that's how we should observe the festival, by distributing prasadam, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Lord Chaitanya used to teach everyone by his personal behavior. Everyone who spreads the cult of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepts a similar responsibility. The Lord is personally chastising and praising individuals in the course of the cleaning. And those who are engaged as acharyas must learn from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu how to train devotees by personal example. The Lord was very pleased with those who could cleanse the temple by taking out undesirable things accumulated within. This is called anartha nivritti, cleansing the heart of all unwanted things. Thus, the cleansing of the Gundicha Mandir was conducted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to let us know how the heart should be cleansed and soothed to receive Lord Sri Krishna and enable him to sit within the heart without disturbance. So, purification. That's the name of the game. We're trying to become purified. Just hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. I know that I've at least this is my personal analysis. Someone can is perfectly free to disagree, but I've found that there's a growing tendency among the second and third or fourth or however many generations we have now to not read Prabhupada's books and not to hear him speak. This is a great mistake, because even you understand or don't understand, it doesn't even matter. Somebody says, I can't follow it, it's too hard, it's too difficult. No, it's not. It doesn't matter whether you really understand it or not. And Prabhupada said about his own spiritual master, I would hear, sometimes I would understand, sometimes I would not understand. But I would go on hearing. And that was what his spiritual master considered that to be his qualification. That whether he understood it or not, he was very eager to hear. So this is important, to hear from a pure Vaishnava, because that's whether you understand it or not, purification is taking place just by submissive oral reception. It's happening. Understanding is overrated. I know that sounds a little revolutionary, but it's actually overrated. Purification is wanted. You may understand everything, you know, from some kind of intellectual point of view, and then your practice is zero. Knowledge does not equal realization. Accumulation of facts and figures, that's not realization. Realization is indicated by what you do, how you live, what you're actually doing. That's realization. Talk is cheap. So hearing submissively from the, pure devotee, that's essential. Hearing and chanting. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita also, there's a nice verse. Anartha nivritti haile bhaktye nishta hai, nishta haite shravanadye ruchi upadhyay. It means when one is freed from all unwanted contamination, he advances with firm faith. In other words, he comes to the, if you actually achieve the anartha nivritti, you come to the platform nishta, for firm faith. And it says, with firm faith in devotional service, awakens a taste for hearing and chanting. So this taste that everyone's hankering for cannot be achieved unless you first very sincerely work on getting rid of these anarthas through this purification process. So it takes time. It's a gradual process. It's not overnight, and it's not a mental adjustment. Oh, I understand everything now, so I wonder when I'm going to be liberated. Well, you don't understand everything. Krishna, when Krishna reveals, then you'll understand. It says here in the in Rupa Goswami's writings, Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sango, etc. There's a whole verse. But part of it, by execution of devotional service, under the guidance of the spiritual master, one becomes freed from all material attachments, attains steadiness, and acquires a taste for hearing. So if one is actually executing devotional service properly under the guidance of his spiritual master, then these anarthas will, Prabhupada says, automatically disappear. So if there's some defect in the execution of devotional service, then one has to consult and apply this process of purification and then wait for Krishna's mercy. So, in the Harinam Chintamani, it's written, when anartha is destroyed, the pure name appears. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, anyone wanting to attain the highest spiritual success of chanting purely must approach a bona fide spiritual master and serve him sincerely and with care. Gradually, as all the anarthas or unwanted desires in the heart are destroyed, the transcendental name of Krishna appears and dances on the tongue of the devotee. The devotee must relish the holy name, now nectarian in taste. Now previously, it means now it's nectarian. When these unwanted desires in the heart are actually destroyed, then the name of Krishna actually appears in the heart and begins to dance. It says it dances on the tongue of the devotee. And then it says the devotee must relish the holy name, now nectarian in taste, at every moment. Thus spiritually intoxicated, the devotee always feels like dancing. So if you want to know whether you're advanced or not, you can meditate on some of these statements. But don't become discouraged either way, because the only refuge is the holy name anyway. There's no other choice. But it says, as the holy name dances, the devotee likewise dances. And at that moment, the ecstasy of love of Godhead also enters dancing into the devotee's heart. The entire world falls at his feet and Maya runs away. Sounds pretty good. So we have to try for that. How long do I have? Till 9 or is it 9? Okay, so I have some more stuff. I wanted to read a couple of other things that are very nice. This is from the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote some remnants, memories and of various incidents with his spiritual master, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And in one instance, this person came to see Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, and he said, "You know, I haven't been here in a long time." And someone who was very solicitous was explaining, "Yes, Maharaj, he was traveling in foreign lands and trying to help the people there." So Gaur Kishore, it said, became disgusted, and he says, "If it is your real object to elevate people of other lands, why do you desire the wealth of a king? I have studied your mentality. You are planning to construct a brick house. If you will only sincerely engage in Hari Bhajan and not consider yourself a Prabhu," okay? Just like Bhaktisiddhanta has this thing about, don't think that you're a guru, otherwise you become garu, you become a cow. So he says, "Why do you desire the wealth? I have studied your mentality. You're planning to construct a brick house. If you will only sincerely engage in Hari Bhajan and not consider yourself a Prabhu, I will inform Lord Nityananda and you will have 50 brick houses. But you desire accommodations for the material enjoyment of your sons and daughters. And thus, Nitai will provide you with material paraphernalia and deprive you of love of Krishna." And this actually, Prabhupada has also stated in a number of places that if you want material facilities so much, you'll get that, but you won't get Krishna. So he says, "Nitai will provide you with material paraphernalia and deprive you of love of Krishna. If in the name of liberating humanity you seek material profit, adoration, and acclaim, you will become fallen. What to speak of being liberated? People will simply be cheated." And after he said this, he started chanting at the top of his lungs. And he wouldn't stop until the person left. He didn't want anything to do with him. So, I mean, Gaur Kishore is quite heavy. I mean, he didn't mince words. But Bhaktisiddhanta concludes, he says, "Our guru, Lord Nityananda," again, Balaram, the original guru, Nityananda also, "Our guru, Lord Nityananda, cheats pseudo-devotees by supplying their material wants but depriving them of love of Godhead." So, you know, one has to be very clear what he's trying for. In the, there's this Vishishyashtakam, I think it's called. Prabhupada wrote this poem, wonderful poem. And he was addressing his godbrothers, who some of whom had fallen into this idea that material acquisition was, you know, really important. So he says, "Because there is only one God, if his wealth increases," means if a person's personal wealth increases, "a saintly person renounces all such material desires for profit, adoration, and prestige. Your gold, my brother, is the source of sense enjoyment. Prabhupada," meaning Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, "has made this meaningful statement. Give up your riches for preaching. Sit down together and make some special consideration. The Supreme Lord says himself that everything is mine alone." So this idea of possession is also very, you know, nirmama, nothing is mine. This is the mentality of a devotee, thinking that you have all these things and they're yours. This possessiveness is actually weakness. Then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also wrote a very incredible poem. I'm not going to read all of it, just certain verses, called Dushtamana, in which he addresses the mind. Now, Raghunath Das Goswami also wrote a poem called Manasiksha, in which he addresses the mind in some very interesting ways. But some of the more famous verses that Prabhupada quotes regularly, there's one of them. He says, "O wicked mind, what kind of Vaishnava do you think you are? Your pretentious show of chanting Lord Hari's holy name in a solitary place is only for the sake of attaining the false prestige of a worldly reputation. It is nothing but pure hypocrisy. Such materialistic prestige is as disgusting as the stool of a hog." Sometimes it's translated as the dung of a boar. Anyway, it comes to the same thing. Do you not know that it is only a mere illusion cast by the potency of Maya? So materialistic prestige, he says, it's disgusting as the hog's stool. He says, do you not know that it is only a mere illusion cast by the potency of Maya? What is the value of contemplating day and night your plans for enjoying wealth and women? All these things are only temporary. So, when you claim wealth as your own, it creates in you an ever-increasing desires for material enjoyment. So when you're thinking these things are mine, your riches should be used for serving Madhava, the Lord of all wealth. Neither is it your proper place to indulge in lust for women whose only true proprietor is Lord Yadava. These women that you're lusting for, they are Krishna's property, not yours. So there are some other verses that are... He says, why do you needlessly suffer the torment of blaspheming the devotees of Lord Hari? So he's addressing this tendency also to find fault. He says, why do you suffer the torment of criticizing devotees, attempting to achieve their eminence, thereby only proving your own fruitless foolishness? The desire for spiritual eminence is easily fulfilled when one becomes a devotee of the Lord, for eternal fame automatically follows the heels of a Vaishnava, and that fame is never to be considered a temporary worldly opulence. So, anyway, it's quite a lengthy poem, worth reading. It's on the Veda base, I won't go any further with that. But there's a nice verse here towards the end. It says, one is truly a Vaishnava who has given up the habit of falling victim to the ferocious tigress of wealth, beauty, and fame. Such a soul is factually detached from material life and is known as a pure devotee. Someone with this consciousness of detachment has thereby become victorious over the mundane world of birth and death. So, I'll just read one thing in conclusion, and then we'll see if there's a few questions. This is from Raghunath Das Goswami's original work, Manasiksha, where he addresses the mind. And it's a very heavy verse. He says, my dear brother mind, the despicable desire for material honor and distinction is compared to a shameless and low-born prostitute who eats dog meat. Yet she is flagrantly dancing in my heart. How then can the pristine love of pure devotion to Sri Krishna... Wow. My screen just died for some reason. Must not be meant to read the rest of it. Is it not plugged? Oh, it never got plugged in. That's why. Is that it? Here. Okay. Didn't warn me. All right, well, anyway, it's dangerous, this desire for name and fame. We'll stop there. Are there any questions, comments?